fitting that we meet in this extraordinary week when the debate changes every day and our expectations and assumptions change every day or by the hour as ministers resign, as amendments are accepted which appear to completely undermine the government's position and so forth. So it's very hard at this stage to predict anything about how this all unfolds and where we eventually get to. But in the middle of this maelstrom, the Science and Technology Select Committee has been looking at the whole issue of what needs to be put in place for the science and innovation community post-Brexit. And we produced a report back in March, which I will address briefly. And we've got another report on the immigration rules that need to be set to facilitate science and technology and innovation in our country. And that's being published tomorrow, so look out for that. But I just wanted to reflect, first of all, on what you, I'm sure, all know, but which is really striking, and that is the extent to which collaboration internationally is just dramatically increasing. So, and this was from a Royal Society report produced before the referendum, as I understand it, and it highlighted the fact that in 1981, 90% of research papers were from UK-based authors without any international collaboration. And at that time, there were 3,500 internationally co-authored papers. By 2011, it had gone from 10% being internationally sponsored to over 50%, and 68,000 internationally co-authored papers in 2011. And the trend just continues. And of course, it's been facilitated by the Horizon programmes across the EU, which is regarded as a gold standard funding programme. But it's interesting also to note that the top collaborator for the UK as a research partner is actually the US, with 12% of papers between 2005 and 2014, followed by Germany in second place with 6%, France with 4%, Japan way back in 13th place, but still in 23,000 papers with Japanese UK collaboration over the 9-year period that they looked at. So an extraordinary explosion of an entirely positive phenomenon, international collaboration. And the Prime Minister, in her Jodrell Bank speech in May, said that science relies on an international community of discovery. So there's an understanding, at least, of what is necessary. It's whether there is the mechanism to deliver it, which is, I think, concerning all of us. So the report that we produced in May, I wanted to just highlight one or two of the key points from that. First of all, from the evidence we got, it was very clear that a lot of people in the science community are just very anxious about the uncertainty, the delay in reaching any conclusions on this, because there are groups of researchers here and now preparing their programmes for the next few years and not knowing, for example, whether we will be part of Horizon Europe. And this delay is dangerous, and it runs the risk of the UK, through uncertainty, being excluded from collaborations and making it much more difficult for us to lead collaborations whilst we remain unclear as to whether there will be participation. The second, so we called on the government to seek to deliver this far-reaching science and innovation pact, which the Prime Minister described, by October. That was what we said in March. Of course, it's not going to happen. There is absolutely no prospect of that. So the delay is likely to be considerably longer. We made clear in our report, and bear in mind, particularly for those of you from other countries, the Science and Technology Select Committee, this is a cross-party committee representing Conservative, Labour, Scottish Nationalist, and me as the Lib Dem chair. So it's a cross-party, and it contains both Remainers and Brexiteers. But the report was agreed by everyone. And actually, if you think about it, this ought not to be an area of controversy between Remainers and Brexiteers. There is no one out there manning the barricades demanding an end to science collaboration. This is not something that stirs the emotions of people in Rotherham. People see the sense in this being facilitated. So we were very clear that we should be part of Horizon Europe, the successor programme. But the government says in its response, yes, but it depends on the price, not at any price, they say, and it also depends on whether there is sufficient influence. Now, this is a key point because we expect that there is no prospect of a third country having a vote on Horizon Europe issues. But the argument that's put very forcefully from people who know how the programme works is that you have influence in the room, that there aren't votes, that decisions are reached through consensus, and that our presence in the room ought to give us the influence we need. But I understand it's politically quite difficult if we are going to be the third largest contributor to the programme, not having a vote is politically difficult. The second key point from the report, regulatory alignment, and alignment with all of these bodies. You'll have noted the vote in Parliament last night, the one defeat that the government suffered, which was to maintain involvement in the European Medicines Agency. But there's a host of other agencies, Euratom and many others, where there is an overwhelming and powerful case for us maintaining our close relationship with the EU. And then the third key point, and in the evidence we got, this is the most important of all, and it's people. It's enabling the best people to still come to this country, and indeed for the flow to go in the other direction as well, for temporary purposes, but also for longer stays. Evidence time and again said that beyond the money, beyond even the collaboration, it's getting access to the best people, and critically, not just the top people, but the technicians who work in the laboratories, who often want to come with the research lead. It's students, and not just PhD students, and it's everything in between, and it's not just the science, the academia, it's the university community, it's business, it's commerce, it's people working in technology across all sectors of our economy, ensuring that they can still be attracted to this country and that the rules will facilitate that is incredibly important. And because this was time and again put to us as the most critical thing for the future of science and technology and innovation in our country, we decided to do a bespoke inquiry which really started to look at, in some detail, at the rules that will be needed, the immigration rules, to facilitate movement and to get the right people into our country. So the report comes out tomorrow. We ran a workshop with key stakeholders from across the science community. And it will be quite granular in its detail about the rules that will need to apply to facilitate people being able to come and go, people who come to this country but need to go overseas to do research so that they won't necessarily be able to prove 100% residence in this country. The rules will have to allow people to go away and come back here in order to facilitate their work. Now, the PM has said that the UK will always be open to the brightest and the best researchers, but that's too vague. It's not clear enough about what she means by that. She says that that will not change, but we have to make sure that the rules allow for it. In terms of the cost, that's another key point. Tier 2 visas, if you have a researcher with a partner and 3 children, the cost of that person coming to this country would be about 21,000 from this September. And in this sector, salary is not necessarily a good indicator of the type of skills that we need to bring into this country. There are often people on quite low salaries who it's very important for us to continue to be able to attract. We also incidentally met with Professor Alan Manning, who's the chair of the Migration Advisory Committee. They report in September, but it's clear from our discussion that they will not go into detail about what the rules need to provide. It will be an analysis of the impact of immigration. It won't provide us with a sort of script for the type of immigration system we need, and that's why it's so important for this community to be very clear about the rules that we need in place, and that's why I think our report is very important. Just finally, we had the Brexit white paper, which followed the Chequers summit, and it's the significant advance is that it's now an accord, not a pact, that she's after. A far-reaching science and innovation accord is the ambition. I don't know whether that marks any difference in what they're after, but there's no real detail about where we've got to in these discussions and when it's likely to happen. And so I think it's very, very important that the pressure continues. I should also mention that the Prime Minister is in front of the liaison committee this afternoon. This is the committee of chairs of select committees. I will be questioning the Prime Minister. I have a 7-minute slot to question the Prime Minister on these very issues, and I will make sure I take advantage of that opportunity. Mm-hmm.